Okay. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you all had a good summer. Thanks for gathering together today. And I'd like to open the meeting with a roll call.
Chris Beck.
Here.
Fay Gallant.
Here.
Brad Crick.
Here.
Adam Kane. Jerry Rolf.
Did you hear me?
Is that Sherry or?
Yes, Sherry.
Thanks. Leslie Walls?
Here.
Jamie Ward?
Here.
Jessica DeRochers?
Here.
Debbie Coxon?
Here.
Jesse Atizio?
Lawrence Murakami?
Here.
Janine Smith?
Here.
Jan Christensen?
Here.
Kim Eames, Juan Gula,
here.
Jeff Baxter,
here.
Trish Winters,
here.
Jessica McCallum,
here.
Thank you. And you have full voting rights in. Jeanette Altman,
here.
Nate Bauer,
here.
Richard Machida,
here.
Yorko Toivonen,
here.
Evelyn Pinsgaard?
Here.
I think for both Jeanette and Evelyn, I heard a very quiet here, but I'm not sure if I did or not.
Evelyn?
I'm here.
Okay, thanks.
Jeanette's here too.
Thank you. Selena Brown? Tom Langdon?
Here.
Tony Abbey? Anyone whose name I did not call. Quorum was met.
All right, moving on to the agenda for today. Hope you all had a chance to take a look at it. Motion to approve the agenda?
A second.
Any additions, discussion about it? Anybody want to add anything to this? No? All right. All in favor to approve the agenda?
Aye.
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 All right. We got an agenda. Let's move to item 1D. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting in May. I hope you guys had a chance to look at them. Any questions about that? Okay.
There should be a motion to approve the minutes before we discuss.
Okay. Motion to approve the minutes. Can we hear a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion. All right. Seeing none, all in favor to approve the minutes, say aye.
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 All right. It's approved. Move on to item two, status of pending actions. Leaf share resolution that we had passed in the last meeting in May went to Chancellor that recommended that, and it is now, if I understand Staff Alliance, during their retreat, the other two universities really liked that resolution and have taken that back to their respective councils and leadership to do something very similar to endorse it. So, is that correct? I mean, I wasn't at the Staff Alliance retreat. Faye was, so it's a...
Yes. So, statewide, there were motions passed in support of both resolutions.
And UAA and UAS, their respective staff councils will be voting on either similar motions in support or similar motions to ours. And then the goal is that the next staff alliance meeting will take it up from a system-wide perspective, since it would impact staff throughout the system. With the goal of then moving that up through governance.
So I think it's a very good time. It kind of shows that initiative that came out of this group here is going now at this point statewide, which I think is says something about the work we're doing here, and I think that's a good example of what you know the change we can affect by this with this group. The term employees, that's since the last meeting, things have changed a bit. Around here, I've seen the effects of some of the budget cuts. I'm sure most of you have felt that as well. As of right now, the layoff list is including temporary employees as well as the permanent employees. And it was my understanding that that's verbally already conveyed to supervisors and managers that they're included, as well as a formal memo that will come regarding that in the next few weeks.
Chris, quick question. You said temporary employees, but you mean also temporary and term employees are now being included on the list.
Yes, that's correct. And so they would have the same, they're on the same list as the people that were, the employees that were laid off, and so that's a list that is preferred to be looked at before going out and going through a full recruiting process from outside. It is my understanding it's the same. It's one list, yeah. Other questions on that? Okay. The bullying awareness training resolution that came out of staff council was accepted by the chancellor, and there's a memo coming forward out of that. It's already approved and coming out of that, but we had dates set for that have already passed. I think it was a July 1st date that was starting for supervisors, and so what dates changed a little because of the time frame. Other than that, it's been recommended to move forward with that. So,
may I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Sherry from Dansard. It seems in my little beanie brain memory that there was the chancellor had challenged regarding who was going to pay for this and how it was going to be paid for. Was that addressed?
I don't know.
Fair enough. Thanks.
but the chancellor's here, so we'll ask him to comment on that here in just a minute. Other questions? Okay, we'll move on to public comment. I know Dave's here to share something, and see somebody else in the back too. So we have a public comment. I know one. Dave, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Good morning. My name is David Wedoff. I'm employed as staff at the Geophysical Institute here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. This spring, I attended a staff council meeting to bring up the issue of the term-funded designation being abused, I think, by UAF as legal cover for terminating employees without cause. The issue has not gone away, and for me, it has become a personal disaster. I received notice that I've been terminated as of the end of September. There aren't any jobs for somebody with my background. I'm a 57-year-old PhD in theoretical physics. Fairbanks is not exactly a mecca for people with that background. I'm tied to Fairbanks for personal reasons, so this is probably not only the end of my employment, it's the end of my career. Probably means the loss of a few hundred thousand dollars in income that I was hoping to earn between now and retirement, and has begun been a deep disruption to every other aspect of my life. This is not just a, you know, an obscure policy provision. This has a real impact on people's lives. I have excellent performance evaluations. The contract under which I am employed is generously funded. The project is ongoing. There's nothing that has changed about the work that we're doing. So you might wonder, why was I terminated? I've described this situation to about a dozen people, and every one of them said, oh, they can't do that. Go talk to HR. File a grievance. So I talked to HR and was told that, in fact, they can do exactly that. Since I'm a term-funded employee, I've been told that I have no recourse. There's no grievance process that applies to me, no provision for filing a complaint, and no reason need be offered for my termination. There's always a reason, of course. People don't do these things out of the blue. So what the policy in effect does is authorizes your boss to conceal the reason. So I decided to take a look at UAF Board of Regents policy, and not a lawyer, but it my understanding is that the UAF Board of Regents policy says that there are broadly two classes of employees. There are at-will employees, meaning employees that can be terminated for no reason. A lot of people think that at-will employment should simply be illegal. I had a conversation with Scott Kawasaki, in fact, who said that. At-will employment basically says that you can be terminated for no reason, which is a little bit odd. But anyway, my understanding of Board of Regents policy is that implies only to a six-month probationary period, after which anybody not specifically designated at-will is called a for-cause employee, which is another legal term, meaning that termination requires a reason, and that reason is subject to challenge, review, and a hearing, all of which is spelled out in Board of Regents policy. What seems to be omitted, though, is that non-renewal of a contract can also be done for no reason. So a term-funded employee is, in effect, perpetually on probation. Perpetually an at-will employee, they can be terminated for no reason, only with actually less labor rights. An at-will employee who is terminated, at least according to Board of Regents policy, can write a letter to HR and get a response. A terminated term-funded employee doesn't even have that. UAF has no policy on when a position can be actually designated as term-funded, so essentially any position can be designated term-funded at the whim of whoever makes up the job description. The HR Director Brad Loveland was here this spring and said that sometimes it may simply be a clerical error. He said a policy is probably needed, but they haven't developed one just yet. I've learned in my own investigations that other institutions that have term employees have a specific policy which spells out what you might expect, that term-funded designation can only be used if the underlying task is a task of finite duration, such as you're a replacement employee for somebody who will be returning, or you're collecting a piece of data, and once the data is collected, there's no more work. But at UAF, term-funded designation can be used for essentially anything. There are people who are term-funded here who have been working at the UAF for decades on positions that are clearly ongoing. In my case, I know the reason for my termination, but the details of my case aren't really relevant. The point is that it could be anything. There could be a new boss who just doesn't like you. The old boss likes you, but the new one doesn't. Maybe the new boss needs a job themselves, so they terminate you and appoint themselves to that position. Or maybe an old friend of theirs lost their job, and so they terminate you and appoint their old friend to your position. Or maybe it's age discrimination, which would be illegal, of course, but since they don't have to reveal the reason, it would be hard to find out. Or maybe the boss is just a bully and likes throwing his or her weight around once in a while. All of these reasons are things that a boss would obviously like to conceal, and this policy authorizes them to do exactly that. The only way to make the system fair is a good old-fashioned American adversarial system where there's a whole grievance process and you can spell out your case and have a hearing. But none of that seems to apply to term-funded employees. So the net effect, as I understand it, is that the term-funded designation is essentially a stealth provision in the contract for bypassing Board of Regents policy and creating a class of employees with no labor rights. Allowing UAF to terminate people for no reason, as you might expect, has a chilling effect on morale and employee relations. It creates a class of employees that can be terminated simply because they didn't have the foresight to get expert legal advice when they signed their employment contract and didn't realize until it was too late that the policies, the grievance process didn't actually apply to them. Right now it appears it's too late for me. In a little over a month, my career comes to an end. And there'll be no hearing and no investigation and no grievance process, as I understand it anyway. I'm not sure I can continue to be, that's more or less what I had to say, I'm not sure I can continue to be part of the ad hoc committee on term-funded employment, which I was part of starting this spring if I'm unemployed. But if you need a poster child for the problem you're trying to solve, here I am. You need somebody to bring you coffee on the picket lines, let me know. And I appreciate the opportunity to share my concerns, and at this point I'm all ears.
Thank you, Dave, for testifying today. I really appreciate it. I'm truly sorry that you've been notified that you're being, it sounds like your contract's not being renewed. Can I ask you a couple questions? How long did you say you were with UAF?
Since 2008.
And those were all, you've been term funded ever since then?
Yes.
Okay. I'm truly sorry. But I really want to thank you for your testimony today. I think there's a good reason to keep that ad hoc committee going at this point. I thank you for your participation in that, because you brought this situation to light last spring. I'm hoping we can look further into this and see why this is happening. And if there is a way that term positions maybe can be reviewed and see if they truly are term positions or if there may be something else. And that, I think that's what the committee was created for, to look into. And I'll follow up with Brad Loblin from HR to see where he is on that.
Yeah, I have one question, too. Are you represented?
What do you mean by
union?
No.
Okay. That's one of my curiosities, too, is how many term funded, how many are represented, how many are not?
Any other questions for Dave? Any questions online, on the phone? Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Any public comment on the phone? All right, thank you. Move on to officers' reports. My report is relatively short, but we'll talk about that a little bit. I already talked about the layoff list. That includes all the layout, all the employees that have been laid off. That includes you too, Dave. Which means that there'll be an internal list. They'll be referred higher because you've worked for UAF before. The wait time for that is not 90 days, but then 45 days, and it's been verbally conveyed to supervisors and managers to look at that list before going out and formally starting a recruiting process for a position. And I believe that will be in writing as well in the next few weeks. There's an ongoing discussion for the emergency leave policy and how that, you know, How do employees handle that for days off, flex time? And there's several proposals that are currently being discussed on how we might maybe have a change in policy where there may be a new category for leave, for emergency leave, for 1 or 2 days. There's some other ideas on that, and so that's an ongoing discussion, but hopefully something that gets some type of solution to that in the next couple of weeks or months before we have cold weather hit. Then there's some groups that came out of the Planning and Budget Committee, 15 working groups that we'll see. Some will have formal staff council representation. Many of them will have staff representation. Some will have some staff appointed to them just because committees are groups that are working on particular issues require often expertise in those areas. And so there'll be staff involved in many of them. Some of them probably won't have a lot of staff there just because they deal with academic issues mostly. But there'll be working groups to kind of address and work out most of the things that came out of the Planning and Budget Committee.
Chris, if I may interrupt, the emergency leave issue, language has been proposed to change Puerto Rican policy to allow for that. And that will likely be taken up at the September Board of Regents meeting.
Cool.
A lot of progress. People.
Yeah.
This is Evelyn. I have a question regarding the emergency leave.
Go ahead, Evelyn.
I don't know if I missed it, but who determines whether or not your emergency leave is emergency leave in the eyes of whomever permits that? And is there a criteria that has to be met before it's granted, or what are the specifics?
I'm sorry, some of that got beeped out. Could you repeat that one more time, Evelyn? I'm sorry.
Who determines that your leave is emergency leave in their eyes before it's approved, and is there any criteria that has to be fulfilled?
Well, there is an emergency leave policy on what for UAF what determines emergency leave. What this one deals with is how does an employee handle that instead of using their annual leave days, you know, which many of us want to use for vacation instead of weather related leave. And use different days than your annual leave. And so there is already a UAF policy that determines what emergency leave or weather related leave.
Okay, so we're basically talking about emergency leave granted by the powers that be regarding weather situations that would basically force a closure?
Yes. I mean, if it's
okay.
Determined that there is a weather incident,
okay.
then how does an employee handle that other than using their annual leave for it?
Okay, thank you.
No problem. Thanks for asking. Other questions? Other questions online? Okay. You saw the memo attached to our agenda today regarding the Technology Advisory Board that's been disbanded. Also, in relation to budget, the current budget state, and so therefore, the Technology Advisory Board is no longer existence. And I think that's all I had.
Where, sorry, Chris, where are the duties of TAB
going other than, I assume, the allocation of funding that no longer exists? I know some other duties that were there. Is that going to the IT Executive Governance Council then?
I'm not sure. That's a good question. Most of the duties were allocating. I was on that the TAB board, and most of what we did was allocation of funds.
Okay.
So accepting proposals and then allocating, reviewing them and allocating funds to that. It's my understanding that on the student side, IRSA is tasked with doing that, something like that, on the student side. The rest is done. The rest of the funds is going to OIT and the library, who OIT is tasked with classroom management and technology for students. And the library, it's my understanding that they are using that for the technology-related items that students can check out at the library. So, but that's a good question. I can follow up on that.
I just have a few things. I wanted to wrap back on the furlough policy feedback that we gathered earlier this summer. First off, thank you and thank everyone in your unit for giving us such excellent feedback on such a short turnaround. We received, I believe, over 70 comments within 24 hours, which was striking and really, really excellent. And we were able to get a response to Eric Seasted, and Nate spoke in front of the board on that as well and conveyed that feedback in Anchorage. So that was excellent. One of the, I think, the biggest concerns that showed up in the feedback were questions that really relate more to regulation than to policy. But we did make specific recommendations to the policy language as it's written. That Staff Alliance is currently working through and trying to get a recommendation together as well from the system level, and that mirrors very closely the feedback and recommendations that UAS put forward. We did very clearly request much more time for review and response before any regulation is in place, and that we are more involved in regulation, and those concerns were acknowledged on the turnaround time. So it will be addressed again, the policy language. And just to clarify, because this came up a lot in the comments, this is not a policy to furlough people. It's a policy so that if furloughs become necessary, we have a structure in place with how we deal with that, because right now there's nothing out there. So thank you again for your feedback. If you still have more or if you've had more thoughts about it and want to send them our way, feel free.
Yeah, that form is still open.
The form's still open.
And we're still receiving feedback on that.
Yes. So we expect that to move forward, and then when regulation is being discussed and proposed, we will be going more in depth at that point into how things actually play out as opposed to the general policy. Brad and I attended the Staff Alliance retreat at the end of July. Brad attended in Chris's place. Tom was also there from statewide, so we had a good group. You might have seen the blog post Nicole sent out from Staff Alliance covering Staff Alliance's goals for the coming year, which include better engagement with the board and better engagement with the people we represent as well. Were two of the big ones. So that brings me to the next section on the agenda, which is staff achievements and highlights. This is something we wanted to be able to bring before the board, things staff are doing that are excellent, as well as our concerns and real business when those come up. But for those of you who watch the board meetings, we very regularly see faculty speak during public comment about their achievements, or you know, they've published a book and they bring the book and show the book, or those things. And we don't see that with staff. And so we'd like to be able to speak about the value that staff add to the university, both within our own groups and then with the board as well. So all the staff councils will be including this short segment on staff achievements and highlights in their agendas. And so it's just an open moment for you guys to address or call out anything that you see that are big achievements or highlights coming out of staff recently. So if you have any today, excellent, but I realize there wasn't kind of forewarning to plan or collect, so just to be aware of, this will be a regular agenda item from now on. Does anyone have any achievements or highlights to share today?
I do. This is Leslie Walls.
Go ahead.
I am a member of a group of a National Association of Professional Women, and I was awarded a VIP Woman of the Year.
Wow. Congratulations, Leslie.
Thank you. As well as achieving my certification of research associate, which was a brutal test, as Faye can attest to, and I finally did it.
So great job, Leslie.
Thank you.
Excellent. Anybody else?
Well, this isn't exactly an achievement. It's not my achievement, but it is a highlight. Just a huge thank you from the power plant to everybody's support for getting us. We had a groundbreaking. Hurrah! We should celebrate the good stuff. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks so much. We're very excited.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Trish.
I'd like to highlight Larry Murakami yesterday received his party's nomination for State House Representative.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. Woo-hoo. All right, then we'll move on to the next item, Chancellor Remarks. Chancellor Rogers?
Thank you. And I can tell we haven't had a meeting for a while because my list is pretty long for things to talk about. Some of them you've already brought up, and I may be able to add a little bit. But first, welcome back, and thanks to each of you for serving on the staff council. It really does, what you do really does make a difference in the way we think about the university, in the way we think about our policies, and there are several that will require active engagement this year, either because of the budget situation or as we work through the Shaping Alaska's Future agenda and the issues that the President and the Board of Regents have asked us to address. I received the recommendations from the Better Place to Work Committee, and really want to thank those of you who participated in that and those who gave ideas. There are a substantial number of good ideas that are implementable, that even in tight budget times that we can go forward with. There are a couple that I think are dead on arrival, but only a couple out of maybe 30 ideas there. So. We will work through those, and I'll try to make sure that on a regular basis over the course of the year, maybe once in the fall and once in the spring, that we brief you on those we're making progress on and what our challenges are on some of them. And I think a couple of them I may get to before I run out of time this morning. For me, of all of them, the number one priority is actually one that goes back to my first month on the job as chancellor, and that's figuring out how to address the child care issue. We've tried multiple ways of getting there, have not been successful to date. It's a real barrier to employees to not have adequate child care in the vicinity of the campus. The Bunnell House has a very limited size and number of licensed spots for child care. We've looked at various possible building purchases, at operations with others. We have included in this year's UAF budget request to the President a capital budget item for building purchase for $850,000 for child care. We would use some additional internal funds if we were successful there to purchase a building, if the right one were available, to expand Bunnell House. Essentially, roughly, we think we could roughly double the size of the early childhood education program and the number of children that it serves. And this is one where a resolution from this staff council to the President, this would be a really good timing for that, because in the next 2 weeks he has to make his decisions as to what of all the requests that came from the campuses, which ones go forward to the Board of Regents. And so if the staff council feels as strongly as the Better Place to Work committee did, I would encourage you to consider some sort of a resolution on that. We will work forward on each of the six areas of appreciation and communication, on looking at hours, schedules, and leave, and I'm going to talk about some of those. Health and environment, education and training, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Facilities, and then the social issues as well. Where should I go next? I guess one, we'll have a formal announcement out shortly on hard closure. We will make no change to the hard closure policy that we've had the last few years, meaning that the university will be closed between the Christmas and New Year's holidays, but the time before the beginning of that period or after, we have a period we call soft closure. That's really at the departmental decision and an individual decision. So no forced leave during those periods before or after. But it is a good time if people want to take a longer break. There's a lot less going on, and a number of offices have found that useful. Another area I would like a resolution from this staff council. Our sister universities are pushing fairly hard for a tobacco-free policy. That is still on the agenda. UAA is pushing it hard, and the President's asked for my recommendation. I've held off pending a resolution from the new staff council and the new faculty senate. I want to hear what you have to say about it. I know when we did the poll, it was about tied. So to the extent that you think views have changed at all, what you think we ought to do about going tobacco-free on the campus, I'd appreciate hearing about that. On the issues of emergency closure, really two things in process. One, for UAF administratively, we're re-looking at the process by which we make the decision for emergency closure and the impacts of that. And this has been a really challenging one because we have to operate, we've got people living on the campus, we have to keep the heat on and the lights working whether or not others are coming to campus. And so and then we have issues of funding in that for those positions that are grant funded with federal funds, we don't have a provision to fund administrative leave. So it's created several challenges. And we also have the question of, there are times when there are some areas of town that people can't get to campus and other areas of town where people can get to campus. And so what's the right call on that? We recognize that different employees have different personal circumstances, make different choices about where to live and how to get to campus. And we have the issue of fairness. If some come to campus and some don't, should those who come to campus get compensatory leave for what is an emergency? So there are a couple of proposals floating around. One that I'm most attracted to would expand our current sick leave definition in to add emergency leave to the current sick leave, and that would be either for a weather emergency that we declare or for a personal emergency as well. That's an area that's right now, if you have a broken pipe at home and you have to stay home and deal with it, it's annual leave. The thought here is if we're going to recognize it on the university side that weather emergencies are eligible for the sick leave, we ought to do it on the personal side as well. Now, the question that was asked earlier, who decides whether it's an emergency or not, and how do you work that through? We'll have to really work on what are some reasonably clear criteria for that, because, you know, some of us have different definitions than others of us as to what truly constitutes an emergency. In fact, there's a section of state law that it's the policy of the state that emergencies rarely occur. How they interpret that, I don't know. Maybe, Larry, you can fix that one. But to me, that one is the most appealing because sick leave is already an approved federal charge. If we just redefine it as sick emergency leave, the fiscal side goes away, and then it really does come down to a matter of choice that doesn't impact people's vacation time. Now, there may be some people whose sick leave is totally used up, and we would have to deal with a handful of those cases at each time. So that's the one that I personally prefer that I think addresses the employee concerns, addresses the difference between employees who can make it to campus and those who can't, in that those who come to campus anyway still have their sick leave available for a sick usage. So I expect those proposals to, one or more proposal to go out to governance, as Tom said, in the next couple of weeks. Parking. Was one of the issues raised in the Better Place to Work. We do continue to run a deficit in our parking and shuttle operation, and we really look at parking and shuttle as a single operation because it is about how you get people to the right place on the campus where you need to be. The suggestion that came from Better Place to Work was to do away with the gold lots. The challenge there is that would make for a bigger deficit. We are going to make some changes in shuttle service. We are looking at lowering the rates for the furthest out, for the Taku lot, that would actually provide a discount for people who are willing to walk a little bit further to provide some fiscal relief, but no changes anticipated in the fee side of it for this fiscal year, but I would anticipate a plan would go forward next fiscal year, and I've asked that once the options are out there that they be briefed at a future meeting of staff council and the faculty senate. I don't think there's anything that stirs the passions of university employees anywhere in the country as much as parking, so I expect a robust discussion over that. But our goal is to try to make sure that the costs of operating parking are at parking and shuttle together are at a break even basis in the long run. Question was raised earlier about term employees in terms of the policy on layoff, it has been our informal policy that term employees have essentially the same rehire provisions as other employees. I think the primary benefit there is it's twofold. One, a supervisor who's looking to hire for a vacancy gets that list. And second, with our current 90-day hold position on all replacement hires, it's 45 days if you hire someone from the layoff list. So that was to create an incentive for supervisors to hire from the layoff list. The request from staff council, which we will act on, is to get that in writing. Right now it is just my dictate to HR and the supervisors. Um, safety and oh, I should mention one other thing. When we go back to the on the issue of emergency closure, we are going to be asking departments to revise their emergency action plans to really discuss if there is a weather closure of a department, what employees might have work they could do from a remote location that would allow them to stay in paid status rather than using leave. That's not clear in most EAPs today at the department level, but trying to clarify what can and can't be done. And again, that policy will go out for discussion at the campus level. Technology Advisory Board, we have, as part of the budget changes, we have adopted the new process. OIT responsible for tech refresh for the classrooms. We think we impact students the most if we focus on the classroom experience. So 60% of the funding from the tab fee will go into OIT, specifically designated for technology refresh for classrooms, 25% to the library for the equipment that's available for student checkout, and then an IRSA-led student process with the remaining 15%, again, primarily focused, and students are the ones paying this, primarily focused on student use. As we reviewed the applications and the funding by the committee over the last several years, we were not convinced that it was impacting students to as great an extent as was the original goal of the tab fee, and tended to be there were some neat pieces of equipment purchased, no question about that, but that tended to be used by a smaller group of people than what we're trying to impact with the tab fee overall. Chris mentioned some of the special program review groups that are coming out of the budget process. Those were covered in my end of June memo, but special expedited reviews of a whole series of university activities, most of them called for by the Planning and Budget Committee. And I really want to thank all the Planning and Budget Committee. You know, in the past, their job has been to build a budget request, and it's all about the good new things we want to do. This year, we gave them an additional task, was all the good old things we can't do anymore, a much more painful process and a huge amount of time commitment. And really what came out, we adopted nearly all of the recommendations. We did make some changes in a few and held off a couple. But I think without that that process that really involved people from throughout the campus, we wouldn't have had, I think, the ability to address the budget in the way that we did. Going over a little bit, bullying awareness. Your resolution called for us to be up and going by now. We have taken a little bit more time developing the curriculum. The website should be up, and we'll be rolling that out. We did slow it down a little bit because of the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights Title IX compliance review. That took a lot of staff energy to get the information demanded by the Office of Civil Rights, and we had to prepare the new Title IX training to bring everyone up to the minimal requirements on Title IX. That training is mandatory. I hope that everyone here has already completed. It is required training by September 1. We were just over 50% of university employees had completed as of the 10th of August. I'll get another report next week. We're also doing better on safety training. It's still not where I would like it to be, but of regular employees, we're at 83% have completed all of the safety training modules. I continue to bug the vice chancellors, and they continue to bug their direct reports on a monthly basis as to how we're doing to try to bring up the safety compliance. And I think we'll be looking at other areas of compliance as well. That said, going back to bullying awareness, that is in progress. That training will be available, and we hope to have rolled out an overall training website that clarifies all these multiple threads of training that have been out there, some of them requested by you, some of them mandated by others, and just keeping track of them is becoming a headache for most of us individually and even more so at a university-wide basis. So we want to make sure that we get that right, so that we're not criticizing people for not doing training when they already have, but we're also notifying people when training is due. And I think that's everything I had on my I must talk about. There are a lot of other things I could talk about, but I think instead I'll stop and take questions.
Do you have any ideas on how UAF is going to be implementing the maintenance fee?
No. We're waiting. The maintenance fee what the president's looking at would be a system-wide fee for building maintenance that would be charged on a per credit hour basis, looking at $2 a credit hour, and then each campus would amass those funds and use them for deferred maintenance projects. In UAS case, the big deferred maintenance project is the combined heat and power plant, and so a portion of what we collect from UAF students would go to pay for combined heat and power. A portion of the cost for those who aren't aware, combined heat and power was put together with five different funding sources in the legislature, and if any one of them had failed, it wouldn't have happened, but the governor signed all of them. One of them is that the university will issue $70 million in bonds, and then we have to pay that back over time. We had earlier estimated that based on our fuel cost savings by moving to the solid fuel, coal, and biomass instead of using coal, oil, gas, and electricity, that we would save enough money to pay off about a $50 million bond. So essentially what we're left with is needing to raise enough money to pay off the other 20. So a portion of that would be with those student fee that I expect would escalate over a couple of years. So it might go up to $4 or $6 a credit hour eventually, but phased in. A portion of that will be paid by research indirect cost under the indirect cost recovery model. When you invest in plant that supports research, a portion of that can be charged as part of the ICR, indirect cost recovery rate. And so those two pieces, a lot will depend on our success in the proposal and the bidding process. We have tentative award for the boilers. They came in toward the lower end of the range that we thought they might cost, so we may not have to issue quite as much in bonds, but it's very early in the project today. So those fees would go into effect essentially as an add-on based on number of credit hours throughout the system, so not just at this campus. But all money would be to the campus where the student's attending.
Hi, Chancellor.
Yes.
Hi, this is Robin online. I had a question about the Title IX training. I know it's for faculty and staff, but is it for every student, whether it be graduate student or undergraduate student, that is a worker on campus?
Yes.
Okay.
And ultimately, it will be for every student, whether they are employed or not.
Okay. And then my second question to that is, should the September 1st deadline be extended? Because a lot of this training kind of came on during the summer when a lot of the students were already gone, and classes don't start until the 4th, and so they're not really back on campus yet.
Well, so people who aren't employed on September 1st, it would be then the first thing for them to do when they get back.
Okay.
And
that deadline is driven by the anticipated federal the federal visit. We anticipate a on-site visit by the Federal Office of Civil Rights in the late September timeframe.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Chancellor, can I ask a question about that? There are just a lot of stories online about nationwide kind of audits of sexual harassment, sexual abuse policies at various universities, and it's a list that's grown, you know, from I think 30 or 40 some to 50 some, and then now I think to something like 77, of which, you know, more than that now. But frequently, I guess there are some stories that seem to conflict about how a school gets on that list. Can you just confirm that there haven't been any incidents that pushed the UA system to get on the list? It's just a kind of a routine audit that's happening?
Well, they're calling it a review rather than an audit, first of all. But when I look at the documentation that we've given, it's much more voluminous than an IRS audit. Second, I think I know of no triggering incident at the university, but Alaska has some of the highest rates of sexual assault in the nation, and it's a problem. And you know, there's hardly a woman in this state who hasn't been in fear of sexual assault at some point in her life, or has not been sexually harassed at some point, or has actually been sexually assaulted at some point. But the fear or the harassment is, you know, that's a societal problem. And basically what the federal government is saying is that universities are the place where they can have influence in trying to change the way we act as a society. And so that's why the push. Last number I heard was 89 universities, and one of those is UA, so that's really three universities, so it's We're over 90. We weren't in the first tier. Many of them have had far worse circumstances than ours, where it's a local police department doesn't want to investigate the star football player, and the university says, well, it's a police department's responsibility, and the police don't want to do it. We haven't had circumstances like that, to my knowledge. And, you know, we thought we were doing the right thing in having our campus police investigate incidents, but it's clear that that's not the expectation under Title IX of that there will be a separate university investigation in addition to whatever the police investigation is of any incident of sexual harassment. And so, you know, for us, that is changing our procedures. We're actually adding Title IX investigatory staff because we expect, as everyone is trained to understand what their requirements are, we expect more reports. We would expect our numbers to grow because as people understand what it is they need to report and what their responsibilities are, which is why the training's going to everyone. I think the other and the real critical group will be our students, is ensuring that all of our students understand what is and isn't sexual assault, what is and isn't sexual harassment. And that's, you know, that's that awareness that we think may start to change the circumstances.
Thank you.
Brad, did you?
Okay.
Any other questions for the Chancellor online?
This is not a question, but a comment, and it's in regards, this is Leslie Walls from ASAP, in regards to the pending construction of the new power plant. From what I have heard, that our office building is going to be overtaken by the construction crew for the power plant, which is going to displace us all into ATCO units, which currently two-thirds of our office is already sitting in ATCO units and have to use two porta potties. And 30 or 25 or so people on two porta potties with no physical running water, I think, is completely unacceptable. Is there anything that can be done to alleviate that problem?
Which, I'm sorry, I didn't hear which office. This one's news to me.
This is for the Alaska Center for Energy and Power. Currently, we have two ATCO units that are up by our lab facility that are having to utilize two porta-potties. And we are currently have office space in the Merle building across the parking lot from Facility Services. And it's been rumored that we are going to lose that office space to construction folks come springtime. And we are going to be displaced into a ATCO unit as well. So that would put our entire office into three ATCO units and two porta-potty units with no physical running water. And I don't find that acceptable.
I will check into that. That's the first I've heard of it.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Thank you, Chancellor Rogers.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time this morning. We'll move on to governance reports. I know we're running a little over time. Debu? Yeah.
Good morning, all, and thank you for request. You know, asking me to provide this report. I'm Debu Mishra. I'm the president-elect of the Faculty Senate, and I'm supposed to be here and interact with the staff council on common issues that we can work together in the governance structure. I'm new. Let me be honest about that. So I'm still in the learning process, and I'm completely vested in staff interests and rights and other stuff. So, I mean, in the governance way, I'm using loose words here, but that's you know, even as a senator, I have looked at staff interests in the past, and Brad can vouch for that. Okay, so so I will be interested. I will be. I'll start discussing, you know, issues with Chris and Faye as we progress over the year. However, I just didn't know what else to report, so you might all be aware of this. I wrote down something from Cecile. So I'll just read it, okay. As most of you know, the Faculty Senate will be dealing with several major issues this year. That's one. Such as expanding distance education in a responsible way, moving towards an electronic student course evaluation system, moving towards a system-wide learning management system, and also I should add Faculty 180 is coming up, and dealing with the consequences of the budget shortfall. And you, staff and faculty, students, all will be vested in this. However, by far, the biggest issue is the adoption of a new general education curriculum. Pause. many people have worked diligently on this for several years now. In May of this year, the General Education Revitalization Committee, which is GERC, delivered its final recommendations to the Curricular Affairs Committee. Unfortunately, the conclusion to this their work has been complicated by recent Board of Regents mandates. It's not a mandate per se, but it's a strong recommendation at this point to have common across all three universities math and English core courses, and to work toward a common general education core. So there are, as you can see. Why I'm bringing this up is that, you know, I see staff as a major support to anything that that we try to accomplish. For a quality education in the university and for student knowledge, anything to do with our higher education quality. And I can vouch today, and I know Chris and Faye both talked about it yesterday, is technology. Mm. We are dependent on technology quite a lot nowadays, and if something fails or something is incomprehensible, that creates a whole lot of man hours, which actually the efficient staff members take care of. That brings me to another thing that when I walked in, you were discussing about staff accomplishments. There are many staff members, and I'll bring this up, that silently work and never get recognized. Never, okay? And they do the best of the best job. I don't know how to highlight those, really. I mean, there is one annual award of the Chancellor's Staff Appreciation Award or whatever that is, and we are asked to put in nominations and other stuff, but that's not enough, really. I mean, Chancellor receives probably 10 nominations, picks one, the staff member feels great, okay, we got it, but there are 9 others that are worthy, equally worthy of that, okay, so... A good idea would be to really, I mean, students. Another thing is students. Students are really great advocates of staff. Most of the time, if we have an issue, we send them to staff, saying, well, go and take care of this because I have this thing going on with me. So accomplishments, we should not limit it to awards and other stuff. Sometimes a simple note of recognition from Chris or, from the staff council saying that, Debu Mishra told us that you did an excellent job here is a thank you enough for them to be encouraged. We need to encourage staff, that's important. We need to recognize what they do. And I'll do my best to support this one if you... to work together on this one, okay? Having said that, that's all I had to say today, and I have to excuse myself now because students come first, really. I have a whole lot of students lined up for advising this morning. And if there are other issues, I'm open to emails, discussions, and other stuff. And thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you, Debu.
Any questions? Yeah. I should take some questions, probably.
Has Faculty Senate discussed the staff furlough?
Not yet.
Topic?
Not yet.
Do you anticipate that you guys will?
Well, we can bring it up, but I don't see that in the current agenda. Okay. The next Faculty Senate agenda. But I'll be more than happy to include that for the October meeting agenda discussion. Or another thing would be that whoever is coming to the Faculty Senate meeting from Staff Council can bring it up, and then it automatically kind of gets into the agenda. So we can do that way. But this is my personal view. I don't support the furlough, okay? I don't know about other things, but I don't support the furlough. And there are 10,000 reasons why I don't. But I don't know about others, how they feel. And I don't speak for everybody. And I don't know how the staff council feels about furlough. I think that regulation needs to be looked at critically. That's my view.
Thank you, Debu.
Thank you.
Do we have somebody from ASUF? Come on up.
Hi, my name is Matthew Carrick. I'm the newly elected president of Associate Students of UAF. Staff concerns and working with staff is kind of new to me, but I can assure you that that's very important to us, since the smooth operation of a university is pretty critical to student satisfaction and ensuring quality education for students. So I look forward to working with all of you. The ASUAF hasn't really picked up too much yet, since most people are out of town and won't be here till the start of September when the semester starts up. We do have several student staff positions that are currently unfilled and won't be filled until at the earliest September. But the staff that we do have attended Title IX training, and we even got our office administrator, Ann Williamson, attended the Title IX investigators training and is now a certified investigator. And we've been working very closely with Title IX investigators, and I think that's a very good, positive step forward. And I really don't have much else to say. Does anyone have any questions for me? Carrick, C-A-R-R-I-C-K. It's Scottish. No one here can spell it.
Matthew, do you have a sense of what the priorities for ASUAF will be this year, or will that kind of be passed out at your September meeting?
I can tell you that a very, very core priority for us is trying to work with the Title IX investigators and trying to put out some student involvement in preventing sexual violence. That was my vice president and I, her name is Celie Hall, when we ran, that was mostly what we talked about. And as the chancellor said when he was here earlier, really it's very hard to make improvements if students aren't on board. So that's going to be a lot of our energy this coming year is going to be invested in trying to mobilize students, in trying to educate students, and creating a more positive, safer atmosphere. And then we're also working on internal improvements, trying to make ASUAF more efficient, more accessible to our students, because something we've faced in the past has been students not really knowing how to use resources. In fact, when I was running trying to get signatures, my most common response was, well, what's ASUAF? So I really want to make ASUAF more available to students and make sure that they know they can come to us for help with anything, and that includes interfacing with staff and with faculty, and also trying to provide more services to students. For instance, we started just in the past couple months offering more design services to students, which we haven't really done in the past.
Does anyone else have questions for Matthew?
I do. Has the UAF student body, or have you heard from anyone here at UAF about the smoke-free, tobacco-free, you know, the push for smoke-free, tobacco-free? It has been mostly from UAA's student body, and the chancellor's asked faculty and staff to weigh in.
Yes. Kelly Wilson emailed me and asked for a nomination for the smoke-free committee and for an alternate. I chose myself as the main committee member for that, and my alternate is Soraya Coburn, who is our public relations director downstairs.
Excellent. Any other questions for Matthew? Questions online? All right. Thank you very much for coming, Matthew. I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you for having me.
Want to take the next one?
Yep. So we'll be really quick on this one, and then we'll have our break.
Yeah.
So the only item on our unfinished business today is the results of the Better Place to Work survey, which the Chancellor did touch on a bit. This is included as an attachment. So this came out of the Staff Affairs Committee, and it produced this summary document. which we took to pre-staff with the chancellor 2 weeks ago. And as he indicated, there are some on here that he's definitely ready to work on or is already working on. There are several that are already being done, but are done kind of at the discretion of a supervisor level or within a department. So the structure exists for these things to happen, but they might not be used as much. So we talked to him about encouraging the use and having it, you know, the tools that we have in place, let's promote them as ways to improve morale. And some of the heavier lifts, like the child care, for example, some of them he's already committed to. And so he and Kari will be giving us updates at least twice a year on which items from these from this list they might move forward and where things are going with that. So from my understanding of the initial call for input from staff council, that's been done. So whether or not more action is wanted or needed from staff council on any of these items or moving them forward, we're certainly open to that. But as of yet, there's no plan to carry this forward other than regular check-ins with the chancellor. It's ordered by whichever one I saw first as I was typing. So, yeah, there's not any kind of priority order in the list. There were, the way the fields came in, there was one response per person, but one person might have included five ideas. And so there was kind of a lot of condensing responses where there were very similar. And working through that to come up with kind of a condensed list of things that were potentially implementable. The one the chancellor did say was a non-starter, which, you know, this group hadn't taken up as anything formal. It was just one person's recommendation in the form was the 37.5-hour work week. He doesn't see that moving at the system level or the president level. If he were to bring it forward, it would just be dead. That was one of the ones he was referring to as dead on arrival.
And then planning on just as an aside information, the Planning on Budget Committee considered that as well, but in voting, that didn't go anywhere with Planning on Budget either. It was recommended not to go forward with that. So.
But other alternative schedules or moving part-time while keeping benefits, those things do exist currently as options that are out there. And so that was when we talked about, you know, promoting and if staff want them to have try and build supervisor support with these things where it's appropriate. So so is there any other discussion on this today? We could certainly, if anyone has thoughts on it over the next month and wants to look at the next meeting.
So, Faye, in terms of next steps, does the group want to consider the chancellor's request for a motion of support for the capital request for child care? That seems to be one that was fairly unanimously supported.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good next step. I'd look at maybe staff affairs to
kind of the timeline for that would be within the next couple of weeks that the president will be making his decision. So
is staff Jeff, is staff affairs meeting soon or
in first Wednesday?
We could move to report it and move that staff affairs track or authorize them to draft the resolution.
You know, if you have a volunteer to draft some notes, break and take it up before the end of the meeting, that's one option. Alternately, if it's simple and clear enough, someone could verbalize it and move that as a motion. And it, I think it could be as simple as, you know, the UAF staff council moves to support UAF's capital request for improving child care or purchasing or expanding
a child early care. Childhood education.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be a one-line motion, something like that. But, yeah, if you had a volunteer, someone could write that down between now and sometime before the end of this meeting.
Do we have anyone volunteer to write that during the break? During the break. So I'll volunteer then to do that during the break.
Okay.
Any other items from that list that we want to do anything with at this meeting?
Well, thank you. Thanks. There was a lot. I saw the responses on Better Place to Work on the forum. There was a lot of feedback on this. And thanks for everybody that did that, but thank you to Staff Affairs and the FAE for condensing that down to a really a two-page document that really encompasses everything that was suggested there, because they'd have to, they had to read through every single one, and there were pages of feedback and suggestions, and so thanks, because there was a lot of work that went into that. Thank you very much. Let's take a quick 5-minute break. And come back to, come back in about 10:15.
So during the break, Faye did not the motion.
Can you read that?
The draft resolution states that UAF Staff Council moves to support the University of Alaska Fairbanks FY16 capital budget request titled Expanding the Early Childhood Program, Vanell House, for $850,000 in state appropriations.
Do I have a second for that motion?
Second.
Richard, would this be a resolution or a motion? Would this be a resolution or a motion?
I believe this would be a motion in support.
Yeah.
Oh. So this would be a resolution in support, since we can't change that. Yeah. So I have
Do we have a motion to consider the resolution?
Yeah.
Do you want a motion to adopt the resolution?
Yes.
Do I hear a second? All right. Discussion on this. Nobody in the room?
Do we want to give any meat as to why we're doing this? I mean, it's good that we support it, and we should, but I think as it is, it's just going to appear that the chancellor said you should have a motion go that way, and that's what we did.
No, we can refer back to the Better Place to Work.
Right, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
I wonder if we need to say because, staff have, or if there needs to be something that. That's just a question, not a mandate.
This is Evelyn. We're having a hard time hearing those making comments and asking questions. They're not close enough to the mic.
So, Evelyn, that comment was, should we add more meat to the resolution, something in reference to the Better Place to Work findings or another reason why we're having this resolution.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Brad, did you have something?
I just want to say that's a perfectly good idea, and it's definitely something, this body could do. It's a matter of, your time, and you can change the resolution as it sits on the floor to add more detail, or you could ask that it get moved to a group to do that and then bring it back for an email vote. It's just the farther it gets away from this meeting, the more of a possibility it may not get to where it needs to go to get in advance of the board. So that would be the reason to keep it as simple, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't add more.
And the discussion, could you summarize the right words?
the Better Place to Work? So there were several comments from the Better Place to Work form that related to childcare and childcare issues. One was that for employees who work on campus and have childcare off campus, even that compounds the parking issue, where even just getting to their kids during, you know, lunch or something is very difficult. That having childcare on campus or close to campus is just a considerable benefit, and that knowing that it exists but not being able to access it because it's such a small program is a frustration.
So, Faye, how come none of those made it to the Staff Affairs Committee's two-page? These are our bullet points.
Those are under the single bullet point because, I mean, literally there were, if we had put every single sub-bullet point, we wouldn't have a summary document.
Well, it doesn't list child care once, though.
Under five.
Under facilities, expand on-site child care.
Gotcha.
Is that what you were hoping to see?
Yeah, I just didn't
read
it fully.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. That was the majority of the comments. Juan and Jeff, you guys read the things too. Were there other ones that jumped to your attention related to it?
So you mentioned the timing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big issue.
Yeah.
Because they needed to get there at a certain time between the having to leave early or
right. Oh, and that's true. And then I think the cost went up too if you weren't the cost of child care went up if you're not able to get your kids within a certain time frame.
And the cost overall too.
Right. I'll say this is all Greek to me personally. I'm not a parent. So if anyone at the table who has personal comments wants to add those in, feel free.
So, Faye, I think the motion could read something along the lines of, in recognition of several issues highlighted by the Workplace Committee, Right Place to Work Committee, the UAS Staff Council resolves to prioritize the capital request because we, of course, support everything that went forward. So I would say that prioritizing it would be a better word choice potentially as well.
I think prioritizing is, if we were moving to prioritize it, I would want to have considered the rest of them
mm-hmm.
as well. I'm certainly happy to support it. To prioritize it, I might vote no. because I haven't heard anything from my people that said this is more important to me than these other ones.
Sure.
So I, other than prioritize, if we had support instead of prioritize, then I think that would be excellent. But if people want prioritize, I'm open to that.
So it sounds like we have an amendment then?
Yes. I move to amend.
Where at?
No, it sounds like you amended the resolution, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Can you read that now, Nicole?
I've got whereas in recognition of feedback received during the recent Staff Council Better Place to Work survey, comma, and nothing.
You could just list that summary finding. Summary findings, span on-site child care, that's the resolution language of the law.
So just requesting expanded on-site child care?
That was the summary.
That was the summary.
Finding summary.
But how do you guys want it worded, I guess?
I think if we're referring to it, we should probably just, as Larry said, just put expand on-site child care, which is the wording that was in the summary.
Could you read that for
the whole thing? Or?
Yeah.
And since it's a resolution, we'll have to change the Staff Council moves to Staff Council resolves to support the University of Alaska Fairbanks FY16 capital budget request entitled Expanding the Early Childhood program, Bunnell House, for $850,000 in state appropriations. Whereas in recognition of feedback received during the recent Staff Council Better Place to Work survey to expand on-site child care.
And yeah, I think you'd want to put that above the first part you read.
Let's start with that, and then we move, and then we've got a question.
And we won't have a whereas on that, then? Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Start with the whereas, and then add the second. Can we read it one more time before we vote on it?
Whereas in recognition of feedback received during the recent Staff Council Better Place to Work survey to expand on-site child care, now UAF Staff Council resolves to support the University of Alaska Fairbanks FY16 capital budget request titled Expanding the Early Childhood Program, Bunnell House, for $850,000 in state appropriations.
Okay. So maybe finish up to expand with what a summary and final.
But I do want it back.
Survey. So in recognition of, say, the summary finding of feedback received during the recent Staff Council Better Place to Work survey, colon, expand on-site child care.
Okay, that works.
UAS Staff Council resolved to support the university.
So we have an amended motion, which means, do I hear a second for that amendment first before we vote on the full resolution?
I second.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Anybody online? Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed signify by saying nay. All right. Resolution. Amendment of the resolution passes. Then any further discussion on this resolution? All right. Do we need to read that resolution one more time, or is everybody comfortable with what that says at this point? Okay. Everybody in favor of this resolution, signify by saying aye.
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 Anybody opposed, signify by saying nay. All right. Thank you. So that's it for new business. We'll go to internal committee reports and other committee reports. Richard, elections?
The elections committee has not met since, I don't remember, May, March.
Okay. Members and Rules has also not met, but is also in need of a chair for that committee. Anybody that's either on that committee or that currently isn't on the committee that is willing and able to chair that, we would welcome that.
Can you kind of summarize your, now that those two have split?
Membership and Rules really deals with bylaws and rules for running meetings.
What's the member side?
And helping new members join and kind of find their footing in meetings and stuff like that.
And it also, correct me if I'm wrong, it also includes if a unit wants to, say, be part of a different unit. Isn't that also part of membership and rules? Or if they're asking who's in what unit.
Yes. Yeah, that's a membership and rules and elections work together on that one, too. But, yeah. Okay.
staff affairs. Jeff?
Yeah, we have not met, but we will meet starting the first Wednesday in September. We're going to meet the first Wednesday of the month from 10 to 11 in the Murray Building. We'd love to have new members come, so feel free to join us. And that's it.
Thank you. And then Leslie is still online for
yes, I am.
University advocacy?
First off, I sent notification to Chris and say that unfortunately I am going to have to step down as the chair due to too many obligations going on at this time. But at the executive board, one of the topics that the advocacy has been trying to champion is the staff mentoring and training, which apparently Pat Pitney has formed a committee to make a centralized training and other topics within that area. I'm hoping that that will be conveyed to the staff council as it progresses. I will like to continue to remain on the committee, but I cannot at this point in time continue to be the chair.
Okay, well, Leslie, thank you very much for chairing this committee. And I understand with job duties that sometimes that gets difficult. But thank you very much for chairing that for the past how many years have you been chairing that? Is it a year?
About a year, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that. I hope somebody else is interested in becoming the chair for that committee. I mean, any volunteers at this point? Otherwise, we'll start looking at other folks. Kind of on that topic, I've heard from a lot of folks that it's difficult to carve out time. With our current budget situation, I think most of us have additional duties, other duties than, or most likely more. Our workload's increased, and so it becomes difficult to do things beside your normal job. And we actually did talk a little bit with the chancellor about this, is that the chancellor really encourages participation in staff council, and this isn't volunteering. This is during work time. Right? This isn't something that you do outside. If you're here for 2 hours, it doesn't mean you have to work 2 hours longer. This is part of your job, which is why you know your supervisor gives you permission to do that. The chancellor's indicated to us that he encourages participation in this by employees, by staff members, and encourages supervisors and managers to make sure that staff members can participate if they want to. We've got a lot of vacant seats on this council. I mean, if you look around the room, there's not as many of us as there should be. And so I'm really hoping to get more people in. I believe we have elections in October, Richard? Is it October or November? October, right? Yeah. So if you know of people that are interested in doing this, please encourage them to do so, because we really want good participation in staff council, and I think some of the issues that were highlighted today by the chancellor as well as by faculty senate today, we really want our voice to be heard, and so I hope that everybody helps kind of recruit people to be on here.
And just a quick addendum to that, for units that do not have elections this October, people do not have to wait until elections if there's a vacant seat to be filled. We can appoint members to those vacant seats. So if you have vacant seats in your unit and you have an election coming up, please encourage people to run. If you have vacant seats in your unit and you do not have an election coming up, please encourage people to volunteer. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'd also like to add that this upcoming election is for all five of the at-large seats.
aren't representing any unit. So even if your unit is fully represented, gain a little more control if you really want to.
Great. Thank you, Rick.
I'm sorry, dog.
I am certain that you did not mean to forget rural affairs. We meet, obviously we did not meet over the summer, but we will be meeting again the first Tuesday of every month in the Kayak Room, which is room 408 in Rasmussen Library. You're also welcome to join us via the phone number or the Google Hangout. So thanks. Oh, I'm sorry. It's an all-day meeting. No, it starts at 10. 10 to 11 a.m., in case you were wondering.
Thank you. We'll move on to external statewide committee reports. The staff healthcare committee. Any report? Did you guys meet at all, Damon?
They met one time during the summer, but I was unable to attend.
Okay.
As was I due to a medical issue.
I'm sorry, Lizzie, can you say that again?
I was also unable to attend due to a medical issue.
Okay.
But I do know that they were working on suggestions for how to measure the next year's goals to be able to qualify for the healthcare discount.
Yeah, can you?
So in some other governance groups, we were briefed by some members. So I was not there in attendance myself, but I've been briefed by some other members who were there. Essentially, there's two proposals going forward to the Joint Healthcare Committee on how to retain that eligibility for the rebate. It's largely points-based. It's basically everything you did this year, plus getting out and being active or keeping numbers within thresholds. So it's going to be more involved. It's going to require that you either make what your doctor considers positive progress or are within what they've set a normal band of the numbers to be, is what it likely will be. And there's also something I was pushing for heavily was activity-based as well. So if you're out there being active, it doesn't matter what your numbers are as long as you're out doing something. That's kind of the 2 points that we got from that committee. From HR, there's an update in that I believe this paycheck is the last paycheck that people will receive the rebate if they haven't committed or qualified for the rebate. So if you go on healthyroads.com, you can check whether or not HR thinks you've completed the requirements, and if there's a clerical error, you should notify them or you're going to lose that rebate. Apparently, there have been a number of people who their doctor, when they went, if they didn't do the on-site Quest diagnostics, if they went to their doctor, a number of those doctors have not submitted that paperwork properly to Healthy Roads, and so there's a significant number of people that had done the activities but are not going to be receiving the rebate, and they'll fix that. So you need to, how to check that is by going to healthyroads.com.
Thanks, Tom.
So the question is, this paycheck or this pay period?
This would be the last paycheck you would receive it for.
Okay. Okay. I thought it was the next, this is the last pay period and it was the next paycheck, but I won't swear by that.
Okay. If you're affected, you should be getting an email. According to statewide.
So just a quick comment here on the Healthy Roads. I've heard from other employees that when they send out a mass email that says, hey, get online, you haven't completed your stuff yet, that it goes out to everyone and you can see every single email address. They are not BCC'd. It is. Here is everybody we are emailing to. If they could knock that off, that'd be great.
That would be great. Can you send me a copy of that email, maybe, perhaps?
I will find one from someone who got it.
That would be, yeah. That's something we should follow up on.
Yeah. So what's your email address?
TJLangdon@alaska.edu.
Sounds good. Will do.
I think that's part of the public record now.
So. Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. compensation working group.
Okay. So I'll let Brad do most of the update, but just structurally, I'm the new chair of that group from Staff Alliance, but I'm there as the Staff Alliance chair, not necessarily the UAF representative. So Brad is one of the UAF representatives and will continue, which we thank him very, very much for, because he's been hugely involved and will carry some good knowledge forward. But we will need another UAF representative. So if it's something that you're interested in, you can either volunteer right now or get in touch with either me, Brad, or Chris, and we'll go forward from there.
I'd be interested in volunteering for that.
Excellent. Thank you. For the staff Alliance Compensation Working Group. Thank you very much.
Brad, do you want to talk a little bit about the attachment?
Yeah. So we had the Compensation Working Group had two items over the summer. One is attached. It's attachment two. It is it's actually Staff Alliance's item, but it came from the Compensation Working Group, went to Staff Alliance. Staff Alliance approved it at its technically July meeting and sent it to Michelle Rizek and Statewide. This is Staff Alliance's recommendation for the FY16 compensation increase. In short, we proposed three options that we thought would be potential, and sort of the commonality between them is we were looking at somewhere around 3.25% was what we thought would be an appropriate increase given inflation. And so we divvied that up into a straight across the board increase, which is what I should back up. We also thought that we were looking at that 3.25% increase also with regard to state general government unit employees who are receiving a smaller across-the-board increase for FY15, but still receive step increases, and that's detailed in the third paragraph in the purpose. And then also looking at some of the negotiated increases for some of the other groups here on campus, which I don't have in my head right now, but it's if you search for UA salary history or go to the alaska.edu/benefits, go to the compensation page, you can find that. So our three proposals were a straight across the board increase. This is basically what UA has been doing since FY09. Our second proposal was to reinstate a grid and a step increase, or I guess actually since the steps are already in place, roll the grid up by a smaller amount and then also grant a step increase to employees. And the hope for this would be in the long run, this would be better for the university in terms of avoiding salary compression and better for employees because, let's say, you were hired in 2010. 5 years later, a new person is hired. They're at the same pay grade as you. Well, since we've had only across-the-board increases with the exception of a 0.5% step 2 or 3 years ago, that person would come in at the same level as you, assuming your supervisor hadn't granted. Supervisors do have the authority to move you up the grid. I don't know how often that happens. So I could speculate, but I shouldn't. So it would hopefully avoid that kind of action if we could keep that going forward. And then our third proposal was similar to this last year, or this year, I'm sorry, an across-the-board increase, but lower than some of the other options with a increase to the number of personal holidays. And we weren't considering the personal holidays for FY15 when we said let's add two. So we'd be asking, or we are asking for three personal holidays for non-exempt employees and two personal holidays for exempt employees. And I did get a phone call from Michelle Rizek, the Staff Alliance chair. I gave her my number because she had a question about our second item in the purpose justification, the 2013 CPI, so measure of inflation for Anchorage. We should have specified that, although I think they understood. For 2013, Anchorage inflation was roughly 3.1%, and we said projected to increase for 2014. She noted that In fact, now the first 6 months for 2014 are out. Inflation in Anchorage is 1.9%, which is actually a little bit lower than it's been for the last few years. So she asked, you know, where did we get that projected increase? And I'm not really sure. I think we were also looking at things like energy costs, particularly for Fairbanks, but just generally, and costs generally in Fairbanks, especially for non-road communities, are going up, and that's probably why we were expecting an increase.
Was that inflation or was that CPI?
CPI is a measure of inflation.
Right.
So, this is not my specialty. Certainly I could be using my terms incorrectly, but yeah, CPI should be a measure of inflation from year to year for the cost of goods in Anchorage. But it's not exact because Anchorage is a very different city economically from other cities they look at. It's the smallest city that is looked at for CPI. So there's some questions there about how it works, but I wouldn't be a good person to evaluate it.
So to wrap up on that, that did go forward to statewide for their budget planning purposes for FY16. And do you want to talk very briefly about geodifferential?
Sure. I'll be fast. So the company also considered a geographic differential proposal. It was brought to Staff Alliance at the retreat. Staff Alliance, we had some good questions about it. We had some questions about some of the data that the committee had received from UAHR, particularly the number of positions that UAHR identified were receiving differentials, which some of our folks from UAS went, there are not that many employees at my campus. Something's weird. So they're sending that back to the committee to talk more with UAHR and figure out some numbers, get some more details on what we would be asking. But in short, the proposal as written took the 2008 McDowell survey, which was still the most expansive survey on cost of living in Alaska, and took its recommendations for communities exactly as written. So rather than say, let's match the state exactly, we went to that survey and said, well, what did the survey say for each community, and let's ask for that. In some cases, that would potentially mean a decrease, but we found that in regulation, employees who have their differential lowered should see no loss of salary. So according to regulation, employees who have a differential reduced should be grandfathered in until they move to a new location, or if they separate and then return. They would lose the differential in that case.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
And maybe just, not to overstep, but maybe in the interest of time, if people have questions on that, they could be done via email or offline for now.
Cool. Thank you, Brad. All right. Moving to external committees. Trish?
The accreditation steering committee has not met that I am aware of.
Okay. Debbie?
We have not met this month. I think we're meeting later this month. It's likely 28th.
Cool. Okay. See you soon later. Chancellor's Planning and Budget Committee is done at this point. You saw the the Chancellor's FY15 budget responses based on the recommendations from the Planning and Budget Committee, and that was pretty well the last part of Planning and Budget. It is my understanding that the Planning and Budget Committee should start up sooner for FY16 budget than we did this year for the FY15, and I think it was in February. But it is my understanding, at least, that the intention is to start earlier, and as soon as that happens, then you'll hear about that. Tom?
Parking advisory.
The Food for Thought Committee.
Food for Thought has not met, and they haven't identified all their committee members yet to meet.
Okay. Master Planning Committee, Richard?
The last time the committee met was back in June, and the only discussions were topics were the upcoming.
Okay.
Do you know the right out in front here in the quad? Is that being repaved, or do you know what's going on there?
No.
Okay.
That's what it appears to be.
Yeah, that's what I assume. But
new weird-looking curves of Montgomery.
The Meritorious Service Awards Committee actually was not inactive. We did meet and put two recommendations forward to the board for Meritorious Service Awards. And we acknowledged that this process needs to be improved so that, A, we have more than two candidates when we have two spots, and that we have kind of new nominations. And also with the history, this award originally came out of community colleges before we were reorganized into one university. And since the reorganization, not a single recipient has been from a rural campus or former community college. They've all been from UAF Fairbanks campus. So we need to do a much better job of finding and nominating people who deserve this award from rural spots. So I'll be looping back on that for the process for next year. We'll hopefully be starting early in the spring next year. And so we'll kind of do updates at that time when I come back around.
Cool. Parking Advisory Committee.
Parking Advisory Committee has not met yet.
Okay. People's Endowment Fund, Debbie Gonzalez. Not here, okay. Research Program Review Task Force, Richard.
There is a final, the tentative draft final report that was just completed yesterday afternoon. The real issue was a lack of real consistent.
There was a lack of real real information. There were no common metrics, so it was really hard to determine exactly what we can do. And as a result, we're going to recommend that the entire process be more carefully defined. In other words, identify exactly what metrics should be submitted. Identify, clarify. When we're asking for information about how they match the mission and goals of the university, to even give examples of what we're looking for, because a lot of times most of the reports either ignore whole sections, didn't include any information, and some of the ones that submitted a voluminous report didn't have any useful information. So it was really hard to meet the chancellor's expectations. Before seeing the report, identify what he wanted to see, and the committee was completely unable to meet any of those, because just by the nature of the different research units, it's almost impossible to. You're not going to compare one to the other. You want to compare it with how they're doing nationwide with other similar units, not how School of Education compares to Juilliard Institute. That's like apples and oranges thing. There was some expectation of that, and that's not good. Never going to be there. Anyway, revisions to report are being done by the leads on the individual ones, and they should be submitted to the chancellor, I think, by the 1st of September.
Thank you.
So, Richard, should we keep that as an external committee report for the next staff council meeting?
I believe that maybe for one more meeting, but because after that, this particular committee was going to be disbanded and a new permanent committee was going to be established.
Okay.
Since
thank
this
you.
Was the first, sort of the first pass.
Thank you.
Cool. Thanks. Rise Board? Ian?
Okay. Tobacco Free Campus Committee, which I think is now the. Is it Fresh Air on Campus Committee?
I don't know if they've officially changed the name yet.
Okay.
The last thing that went out was in January. It was a resolution from System Governance Council, and basically it states that they are asking the Board of Regents to let the three chancellors decide their own policies for each campus individually. But we have not met.
Okay. Based on the chancellor's comments today, he is looking for a resolution from
from us, from this body, regarding the smoke-free or fresh air on campus.
And I think it's been, what, 3 years since we did the last survey? It may be time to do another one, just because, you know, things change.
Okay.
And it might be time to get some more input. I know last time it was an overwhelmingly no. I know the chancellor said it was about 50-50, but I think a lot of people got really uptight about it.
I think the last survey was last fall.
Yeah.
But come to think of it, there may have been another survey also 3 years ago. But,
yeah.
But yeah, the most recent one was last fall.
Okay.
I have the data from that
in
the staff council office.
I think, okay. I mean, it was almost an even split.
Exactly an even
split. Yeah, exactly even split last fall. But based on the chancellor's remarks, I'd like to know if we put forward some of the summarize the major pros and the major cons from last fall survey and do a yes or no poll, yes or no vote with a closing date.
Right.
That way I think we can give the chancellor some direction to that and also pull what the current, what the current feeling is on campus among staff regarding this particular initiative.
So who had the input from the last survey? Because I'm more than willing to put together a summary page or two.
Nicole, I do.
Hey, Nicole, if you want to send it to me, I'll put some bullet points together and we can put that out there.
Okay, it's just FYI, it is a lot of
Cool. Thank you, Jessica, for to take that on.
It's also, the cursory data is also on the blog. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
The summary?
Just the total vote.
Yeah. Okay. Staff Appreciation Day. I know Ashley's not here. I didn't hear Ashley online. Okay.
We did, just as a quick bit, that was one of the Better Place to Work recommendations that the chancellor was intrigued by. And we might see some movement with was having an additional Staff Appreciation Day or Staff Development Day at a different point of year, because for some staff that May time period, they're just not here and not ever able to take advantage of it. And so we're looking at potentially having a second smaller day. That's still very much in the, oh, that sounds like a good idea stage. It hasn't gone anywhere from there, but that might be something that we end up having either this committee or an additional committee involved in.
And then the tab board is no longer, and so the memo from the chancellor was attached to the agenda. Strike that off the agenda for next meeting.
I have a question about that.
Yes.
Well, one of the roles of the tab board was to review how the money was spent in the previous years. How is that going to be done now? Is it just going to sort of take everyone's word for it that they did the right thing with it, or is there some other actual feedback to the students that whether their money was being spent appropriately?
Yeah, I think that's what Tom was referring to. I'll look into that and see how that's if and how that's going to be done at this point. Ad hoc committees, the term funded committee. Ad hoc committee?
The term funded committee did not meet the last May regular staff council meeting. If there is interest in another meeting, email me if you want to be a member. I did want to formally re-request a number of term funded in a manner that we can see the percentage of people. So I would like to add additional subtotaling based on what David said. It would be interesting to know if any union represented people hold term funded positions.
Could you send me an email with the additional sections you'd want in the data?
Yeah.
That would be great. Because
yeah.
I talked to Ian Olson and Tear on Thursday, and he's starting to pull the data on that. I just had to kind of loop back around and remind him that we still wanted it. So He started to pull the numbers. He thinks he can get the numbers we need, and I also asked for a trend, you know, so over the past 5 years and then a comparison to previous. So other subtotals, that would be helpful if we can we can get them in there. So,
yeah.
But the sooner the better, because it's on his plate right now for numbers, and then I'll loop back to you. Okay, thank you.
And yeah, based on Dave's comment, I think there's a real, there's still a need to have this committee look into that. So Dave, how many members do you have on this?
He had three, counting Brad, myself, and David, all of us here.
And Kim, so forth.
Oh, no, we did have Kim, too. Okay, we have four.
Okay.
Can I be part of that committee if I'm unemployed?
Good question.
Well, it's a public meeting. I don't know about part of the committee, but I mean, in terms of participating, I don't think there'd be any restriction there.
Yeah, I don't think so either. All of our committee meetings are open, as far as I know. So you can certainly be part of that meeting for sure. And thanks for wanting to do that still, Dave. Okay. All right, if we've got nothing else, then we'll do a quick roundtable discussion. Can we go ahead and talk?